Okay, welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm one of your hosts, Chad Youngblood.
And I'm Betty B. Dudley.
And today we're here with Tom Bocci and Jerry G. Angelo from the movie Arctic, which we have just had the pleasure of seeing for the second time.
Yeah, at Popcorn Farts.
Thanks for having us, guys. Yeah,
thank you. We're glad you stopped by. First question we have for you.
My first question is, how did you come with the name Arctic?
Basically this happened after my car got broken into a long time ago. Somebody was spray tagging ATK on the walls, which you see in the movie. That's kind of throughout the film. And when I found out who it was who was breaking into my car, it was a gang member or a gang called Arctic in North Hollywood. They're not very big, but that's kind of what inspired me. What they stole out of my car was, when I was in a band, they took these burnt CDs we had made. They didn't take anything of value. I believe I had a credit card in the car. It was left on the ground, but instead they took my old band CDs because that's worth more than any credit.
So. Wow. That's actually, they were like, you know what? We need this. We need to listen to this. We're going to pass it along.
Yeah. They have good taste.
Yeah. Apparently.
There you go. See? They're thieves, so they got good taste.
Yeah. So that's where the name came from, honestly. It was just something that actually personally happened to me. Yeah.
Okay, and for you, Jerry, how did you kind of get into the character of Arctic? Because he's very different physically than you are now.
He's like, why'd you shave my beard?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, Tom's the writer-director, and Tom wrote the character of Arctic with very deep roots and a whole blueprint of who he was. So just in talking with Tom of what he's wanting to bring to the screen and intentions and stuff like that, so... You know, Tom was the true creator of Arctic. I was kind of like his little puppet. He's like, yeah, do this, do this. And as far as the acting goes, it is internalizing and coming up with just a unique character that is likable on screen. I wanted to make something that you kind of hated to love. You know, make a villain that's a little bit with endearment. So, you know, he's just not bad for the sake of being bad. You just hate him to hate him. Was a real person as well.
And getting in, like, in between takes, like, constantly, not just because he was worried about his pecs, but Jerry was doing push-ups constantly. And then it was really funny because, also to psych himself up, at the time he just got into hot yoga, and he would do, like, a yoga pose, but he looks like Arctic, like, menacing, but doing yoga.
And, of course, has long hair and a beard and during the, you know, when I had that kind of look, Tom was like, Cassie, he's wanting someone with a beard, long hair, and like morning walks on the beach. And we just hit it off.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was interesting seeing him work on the character beforehand. We would get together, even like dating back to like maybe a month, 2 months beforehand, 3 months, and work on the voice and run lines. And then when he was there on set, it was interesting because the movie's very intense. And he was just extremely intent, like, in between takes. I'm not saying that there was no snapping out of it, but he was just constantly, like, needed to be worked up, you know, to get there. And it worked, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's very...
I'm not a killer by trade.
Yeah, he had to get there.
Took a little work to get there, huh?
Yes, yeah. It did.
But it's very convincing on screen. You're very terrifying in it. And like I said, you do kind of feel like there's... layers to it. He's not just a totally evil guy. You kind of see why he's doing what he's doing. And you may not agree with it, but you understand why he's doing it.
Yeah, what was important is to show that there was a reasoning, you know, for his madness. What's madness for maybe normal people or a regular society, for him, it was, you know, there's all the lines connected, like a blueprint.
Yeah, it's definitely a layered character. And like the whole voice, I was going to ask about what... were you thinking when you were like, it has to have this, you know, this character has to have this tone or this dialect?
I was thinking there's a movie called A Single Shot, and I think it's an Appalachian accent, if I'm saying that correctly. I don't know if I am. I'm not
so,
from
yeah.
America, so excuse me. And I wanted to, like, almost combine that with Bane.
Okay.
Like, this idea of, like, somebody who talks very happy, but he's, like, doing scary things. Like, it was almost like this weird, that would be very funny if it was like that. And then it became this real thing where we were, like, morphing these two sounds and then moving away from, like, the idea of it being more happy and just being really dark, and it took this darker tone. And, yeah, so, honestly, it was weird. It was almost like after we met and started figuring out how to do the voice, it's like the character, like that's when the character started to grow.
Yeah, Jerry did. I mean, you did. It was a very good job with the voice. It was very menacing. It's like not only do you have like a stature, you have a presence, and then the voice is just resonating. Like hearing it for the second time, it's kind of haunting in a sense because it's just
Especially hearing it's in a the character theater voice around.
Oh yeah.
Well, what was interesting because we did so many rehearsals and just practicing and stuff and coming up with a voice for Arctic. It wasn't until we actually. I was able to finally find the voice, the actual physical voice for him, to where it started to become real. Because as building a type of character, I have to believe myself in doing all this stuff. And if I don't believe it, it's hard to act that. Correct. You know, you don't want to just like wing it or fabricate it.
Yeah.
So once all the pieces started to come together, and then having a leather arm and stuff. Now he became something that, it's completely not me. If I have to act myself, it's a little different. It's harder to act yourself.
Yeah.
But you can start to get a visual and an idea of what this other person is.
And that's kind of like a little pointer for, and not necessarily a spoiler for people who haven't seen it, but for people who have, it's kind of like a factoid for both audiences. But, anytime you see Jerry and there's someone in the chair, he has this interesting leather half vest he wears. And when he doesn't have somebody in the chair, it's almost like his arm is limp. It's this weird mental trigger that happens as soon as he puts that. He's getting into the character of the comic he's creating of himself. And then, he becomes the Arctic that we know.
Go ahead.
Kind of like Finding Nemo.
Except without all the blood.
Yeah. Now the opening of the film was very interesting with the comics.
Yeah.
And that it reminded me that you were seeing kind of like storyboards from the movie.
Right.
Did you just come up with the credits after the movie and kind of go along with some of the stuff that happened, or did you come up with some of the opening shots beforehand and then kind of work those in?
Honestly, we had that idea before we ever started shooting.
Oh yeah.
There was this idea to come up with a really cool credit sequence that tied into the story. And then it just sort of, we met an artist who we had named Ben
Morabi,
who created all of Arctic's artwork, and we had that faxed over to us as we were doing the actual, when we're actually shooting out there. And what was interesting is that as I started to see more of those drawings, and we knew we wanted something that ties in, there was this natural thing that happened, because I knew I wanted to show images and photography or something that tied into later. And I think the original idea was maybe news reports, but I was like, I've seen that at the start of every horror movie that has to do with a killer. And so I remember seeing the start of Children of the Corn. And there was this great thing with the drawings that they did, with the kids are drawing, and they just put normal titles over. So what I wanted to do was something that felt more like somebody was drawing pieces of the storyline later, and that the credits were all part of it. And so, it just kind of worked out as I saw more of Ben's drawings.
Yeah, it was a really great credit sequence because it really brings you right into the movie. You get a sense of what it's going to be like right away.
Right. Yeah.
I would like to know, this question came from me watching it the second time around.
Okay.
Why does Arctic favor boy Adam over his other sons? Is Adam the eldest?
Adam is kind of like his star pupil.
Okay.
So in the film, when we designed our set, it was something I wanted to explore more, but we just ran out of budget and time. But boy Adam has his own room. Everybody else is stuck together. It's like they haven't graduated yet. And so the only time you really see boy Adam is when he's in his room waking up, but you see it's his own individual place. And so, it's almost like he's just the one that's broken through, that Arctic feels like he connects with the most. And, there wasn't anything that I necessarily wanted to explore in terms of that, other than maybe seeing more of boy Adam getting the special treatment. The idea for me was almost like to drop in a slice of life, like we're just seeing Arctic with this boy, So that was kind of the basis of that.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't know. I kind of took away that maybe he was like building him up to be a successor at one point.
Yeah,
like later
yeah. That
on.
Was that was the main idea. Okay. Is that it's almost like Boy Adam is his killer in training, you know, and his son in training, you could say, and he's trying to get him to take over so Arctic can leave with his wife and they could just go do comics. That's what Arctic really wants to do. He's just confused about his creation process, you know. So yeah.
Yeah, I know the production of this, you said it was filmed mostly in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
And you had an interesting thing about that I hadn't even noticed at all.
Yeah. The film takes place entirely in a sunflower field.
Yeah.
And there's no sunflowers in Albuquerque. Yeah. Especially not in December. So, you know, we shot basically in an empty field, and I would just kind of direct these guys and say, all right, Jerry, you're going to sit down, you're going to howl. Chase, I'd like you to be over here, and you guys just play off of each other, and we kind of, you know, we blocked out the scenes a few times, and we just did it, and we kind of worked out the spacing, because I knew about how many rows of sunflowers I wanted.
Yeah.
But we weren't sure we'd pull it off. Like, honestly, I still don't know if it's been pulled off, but I feel like we're at a festival, it's probably done now. The edit's probably done, right?
Nothing else to do, yeah.
Yeah, like, I feel like we're okay
right? We've talked to, no one has noticed. That was not. Yeah, I just assumed it was. You filmed it somewhere where there was a sunflower field.
The sunflowers exist on the border of Connecticut and Pennsylvania, and
yeah, we filmed a couple tight shots there of just like a few things, like when you see the bee land on a sunflower.
Yeah.
That's from a real. But the idea is when I mix it in the edit, and the edit goes by fast, you don't catch it.
Yeah,
and that's part of like the cinema magic of how it came together.
Yeah, because it came across beautifully. I had no idea you weren't in an actual field out there. I just thought you were filming somewhere where you had this like. Hey, there's an open sunflower field we can use, like an old house. And it came across beautifully.
It's kind of like the movie What Dreams May Come, but just a horror film.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And with more dreams.
Yeah. Flowers.
Yeah, I mean, the best VFX are VFX you never notice.
Yeah.
A great example is that, of that is Joe Lynch's Mayhem.
Oh, yeah.
That movie is full of VFX that no one would ever pick up on. They think it's all practical, but it's done so well. I believe it's practical, and it's totally not.
Well,
he did a great job.
Even you were saying in there when he knocks the dishes over on a certain character, I did not realize that was all done CG too.
Yeah, because this was a location we got last minute. They weren't comfortable with us destroying their house, as you do.
Yeah, I just thought it was you brought some, you know, breakaway
like,
dishes.
Yeah,
or something
breakaway or rubber dishes or something.
Threw on there. I didn't realize that was CG. That came across well too. So like you said,
them broken, all that.
Yeah. So the idea is, I wanted to use VFX there because I really wanted to. Have the effect retain the weight of when they land.
Yeah.
I really wanted it to feel like, you know, the character of Flynn is getting destroyed.
Yeah.
So, and we just couldn't pull that off safely, you know, with me being the stunt coordinator.
And pregnant.
And pregnant.
We just found out she was pregnant.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you had to be real careful there.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Jerry, how was it working with Chase Williamson, who's a Popcorn Farts alumni?
Yes, you know, Chase is an A-list professional actor. I think he comes from a conservatory, so a completely different background of acting that I've learned.
Jerry comes from politics.
Yeah, my background's business and politics.
So that's where the strongest actors are, is in the political field.
Yes. Yep. But Chase was wonderful, and what was interesting for him, you know, is this. I mean, we had like 12 pages of dialogue back and forth, and he got locked up on that chair and was stuck there for the whole time, you know. And like he was very prepared. I was very impressed, and was so grateful to have him in our film.
Yeah, and like that torture chair is a real death device. Like it's real metal, it's real barbed wire, and he was stuck in it and like covered in chains. And you know, we tried to add cushions and stuff, but there's only so much I could do to save his life. Right. It's still a death device. And so what's crazy is a lot of times that throws actors, you know, once they're actually in it.
Yeah.
And that did happen. He thrived on that.
One thing that he said that sticks in my mind that would be fun for you guys to know is that he said, you know, he'd be stuck in this chair that his body is sitting in there and his arms are in a certain position locked in there and his head is at a special tilt and his legs are dangling and stuck in a position. He was there for so long that when he got out and psychologically being in this character and all that, he would have nightmares and he would feel that his body is still stuck from being
like he would contort possessed. To the chair.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Possessed from being in that chair.
Just because it's pure metal, it's like you're hold, you know, it's holding you in.
Like, it did not look comfortable.
Yeah,
sharp edges.
Yeah, you feel it.
I like that. And you was it Chris that came up with the belt buckle for the?
Yeah. So he actually took that out of an actual truck. We were at a junkyard. He created that chair literally 24 hours before we shot. Originally, we wanted to find like a dentist chair, like from like 1918 or something, and just like wrap some barbed wire around it. And then we're like, "Fuck, we have no money. Also, we have no time."
But we have Chris.
Yeah, but we have Chris, and Chris loves welding, and we were shooting in a welder's shop, and the guy was like, "Let's just do one." And then Chris was like, "Yeah, like," and so he pulled out like all these things out of actual cars and he found around the junkyard and just started welding them together, like old tractor wheels for the base, these big, huge canisters, and I don't even know where he found half the stuff. But one of these things was to actually create like this chair that has pivot points that you could waterboard someone if you bring it back, and it was stable and
there's a lot more that it can do actually that just wasn't in the. That's like maybe for the prequels and sequels,
right? Yeah.
I know you said you were going to try and bring the chair, but it seemed a little too dangerous.
We wanted to actually set it right out here. For those of you who are listening and don't know, we're in the patio of Popcorn Frights, and we wanted to set it here, and we thought it'd be like this great opportunity to take pictures in. And then we did like a test sitting in it, and it was like, we're going to be sued many times over. Everyone will die who sits in this chair.
Sharp.
This is a horrible idea. Why do you let me come up with ideas? You know, so.
That'd be one you had to put a rope around, just let people stand.
Or people just come in with their own padded suits.
Right. Yeah. So it just, we weren't able to pull it off, but it's because it's, you know, now everybody knows that chair is a real death device. So Chris did a good job.
So when is the release date for this now?
The release date is September 10th. It's on VOD and Blu-ray. A few days before, September 6th, we'll be doing a limited theatrical run. And we'll be in L.A., we'll be in New York, we'll be in Austin, Phoenix, and a few other places that are still being worked out right now. Okay. And, looking forward to that.
And you're coming out through Dread Presents?
Through Dread Presents, yeah. Okay.
All right. So, your final question?
My final question I ask everyone in the chair, no pun intended.
Right.
The regular non-harmful chair.
Right.
This is a question for both of you. If you can be in a part of any horror universe, what horror universe would you like to be in?
Return to Oz. It's not a horror universe, but the truth is it's the scariest universe that's ever existed.
It's pretty terrible.
It is a horror. I mean, I love that film, and it is horrific.
Yeah, or you know, The Neverending Story. It's not horror, but it scared the shit out of me too when I was a kid.
That's a traumatizing movie when you're a kid.
Oh yeah, I mean Atreyu and all that. Like,
yeah, that's more traumatizing than Freddy Krueger because it's happening to kids, to small kids your age. You know?
Right. Yeah. So one of those two.
Okay.
You know.
Jerry?
I have a couple. Can I name a couple?
Yeah, of course.
So you had mentioned before, like Children of the Corn. Classic. That would be freaking terrifying to be in a town with a bunch of little kids like they're demonic and stuff and cornfields
and just kids in general. Am I right?
A favorite was like Freddy Krueger, you know, being stuck in the dream lapses and stuff like that. And then there was something else. Oh, like Chucky and with a little possessed doll. Yeah, no thank you.
Yeah. Would you like to be Chucky or one of the non-survivors?
No, Brad Dorff is Chucky. You know, I was actually in a movie with Brad Dorff.
Oh, really?
But he played Brad Dorff, or he was not a doll.
Non-Chucky.
It was called The Control Group. That was a lot of fun. It was a horror film. I don't know if you guys ever heard of it.
Okay.
A little classic. The Control Group. Yeah.
But yeah, we'll take that out.
But I want to be one of the good guys.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to like last through the whole movie and go through hell.
Well, survive. Arctic's a good guy.
Yeah,
he's nice. He's a creator.
He has got a big heart.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, guys, for sitting down with us and discussing Arctic. And we're definitely, you know, enjoy the film. And, you know, as I usually say in my end, do you have any last questions, Chad? All right. Stay tuned to the horror, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.